passing by the faces here, I see a lot of young folk in the crowd. The young people are here. From what I see, fella, that old fat fella there, he said he ain't not old enough to drink coffee yet. And he's somewhere between 85 and 95 years old. He's not old enough, so I was telling him about myself. My mother would send us to Sunday school, and I'd go to sleep every Sunday at Sunday school. And I told my mother, I said, "Mama, if you let me have a cup of that coffee, it will keep me awake." And give it here, boy. You don't drink no coffee, coffee stunts your growth. And I kept asking, so finally she told me I could have a cup of that coffee. And I got me a cup of coffee. That coffee, you like strong coffee. And it stood the hair up on my head. And I got to Sunday school there that Sunday morning, and the first thing I did was go to sleep. And she brought me back home from church. She said, "I will teach you. Then now you told me to let you have that coffee, and you went to sleep before the pastor even got to review the Sunday school lesson. And kind of turned me against coffee after that." So you had a little bit of severe discipline that come behind such things as that. So I was telling the lady over at the refreshment tent, she had some coffee over there. I said, no, I don't want any of that weak coffee. I want that coffee to make your hair stand straight up, because I've got to stay awake. And that coffee that my mother gave you just wasn't strong enough. We are the Yandy Dancers. We are a group of retired railroad men. One of my scholars here had calculated how many years we all had spent on the railroad combined. I spent 35 years, 3 months on the railroad. I retired when I was 52 and a half years old. I'm 65 now, and I'm the baby of this room. See, all these other fellas are my elders. And this young fella here is the senior citizen. And they wasn't making birth certificates at that time. So he says that he's 85. But when he began to reminisce and talk, he talked about things that the only thing a person that 95 would know about. So, but he said he's 85, I'll take him at his word. They are between, say, 65 and 85. We have had individuals who were in their 90s who've gone on to the railroad in the sky. We're becoming extinct because there aren't any more of us. And what we are trying to do is to more or less repeat and let young people know part of the history of the railroad and how the task was done with tremendous effort and strength that it took in the hand-eye feet coordination that it took. Especially to you younger people, I see this young group here sitting here. This day of the modern machine age, we need to know a little bit of mathematics, and you're going to need to know a little bit of physics, trigonometry, calculus, and algebra, chemistry. All of this is included in the railroad. More so now, it was even included then. But more so now, because we're talking about a revolution in this country, we're talking about the high-speed rail. And as I told you yesterday, I'm angry. I'm almost mad. Because other people have outperformed us And never before in history of America have we allowed other countries to outperform us. Japanese and the French and the English people have already perfected a high speed barrier. We are now in the process of doing that. A train that travels at 300 or better miles per hour, a train that is safe to ride on, and we have to construct packages right now we have to buy these from the foreign countries that take jobs out of America. So we're going to have to come up with some imaginative skills and imagination, and I'm looking for some engineers and mathematicians and computer experts among this younger group. They are our future. So you pay attention to that teacher when she begins to tell you or teach you that mathematics and that trigonometry and the sciences, because we are depending on you. Gandhi is a name that comes from the manufacturer of the tools. The dancer in comes from the rhythmic and emotion, those actions that the men made while performing the task. The machine age was not in existence. Everything was done from the muscle. The leaders or the callers had to be both psychiatrists, psychologists, and sociologists, because they had to get inside of that man's head, and they had to do things, sing songs, and put ideas into his head. That's what the songs are about, how to get inside of an individual's head and have him to do those things that he has no idea, you know, if he thought about what he was doing. Example of that is this rail, what they call a 100-pound rail. That means that it's 100 pounds every 3 feet. Can you imagine this rail? The length of it is about 37 feet. And the hands of 8 men. And they took it and moved it almost like it was a matchstick. It calls for three qualities that the man from Florida spoke on years ago. They gave him, put to his Florida and him, and asked him, what kind of individual do you look for? To put on your athletic team. Well, they got to have three qualities. They must be agile, mobile, and hostile. Well, when you look at this group here, they seem to be, you know, passionate, and they seem to be quiet, but that's why I stay away from them. See, they are hostile. But that was the only way that they could play on the railroad. You had to be agile, quick of feet, quick of hands, quick of eyes. You had to have keen hearing. So, because you move instantaneously, you had to move, you couldn't think about it, or I'll move the next 2 seconds. No, when the caller gave the command, you either move or they sang, Nero, my God, to be over you. So you didn't want that to happen, so you move. You had to be hostile, because you had to get angry at what you were doing. And this caused you to keep your equilibrium. Otherwise, they carry you off to the mental institution. So you took out your angerness into your work. The caller had to know the mood that the man was in. You know, he had to know whether or not the man's child was sick. You had to know whether or not a man had a little domestic problem, where he and his wife had some arguments or, you know, a little disagreement. All of that came into his work. Because if a man's mind was on something else. He wasn't apt to be as agile as he would be when his mind wasn't concentrating on that. He had to more or less set the tone, give those men, or get inside of those men's heads and control them. Now, everything that you see here has a weight to it. Everything that you see here is heavy. All except maybe the shovels, as I see, is about the lightest thing or two that we have here. That is what we call a tamping or track shovel. That is used to put together the grain underneath the tire and put it to a level. The spike mold, that's a 9-pound spike mold. And man must have control of that. He must have good hand and eye coordination, because he cannot look at what he's handling. He has to keep his eyes on his target, but he has to guide that to his target. Now, we are, you know, somewhat a little bit aged, and we can't do it as fast as we used to. But to imagine pulling that number like a typewriter. You've heard typewriters, not the usual typewriters. That's the way they would twirl the hammer. So it took a good bit of effort and a good bit of strength. The jack bars or lining bars that we would use weigh anywhere from 65 to some heavy bars weighed 95 to 110 pounds. But you see him handling it in his hand, that bar right there perhaps weighs 65 to 70 pounds. But he closed it up as if it's nothing. But that's because of his years. He has developed his muscles. This is a newer jack that came to the railroad sometime in the 60s. It's a small jack. It perhaps weighs about 65 pounds. The heavier jack, and that's supposed to be an aluminum jack over there, weighs approximately 85 to 100 pounds. Now, when we started on the railroad, they didn't have aluminized jacks. They had the metal jacks, iron jacks, and you just didn't want to be the jack boy. You lug around 125 to 150 pounds in both hands, one in this hand and one in this hand. All day. No one had to put you to bed at night. And you didn't have to worry about you staying out late. And that's the first thing, usually when you went to the railroad, they call it new meat. You were assigned jack boy. There were 20 jacks. 20 on this side, 20 on this side. And those men would work at such a pace that you would have to struggle to keep that jack ahead. And constantly, the foreman would be hollering, "Jack boy, jack boy!" And now you carrying those jacks maybe a distance, or maybe that building down there, halfway that building, and you got to keep them ahead. So by the time you set them down, and the men would work, you know, sort of fast, and you had to run back and get the others, and you bring them back, and they're constantly calling on you. Well, see, that caused you to eat hard. You didn't have a problem with your dieting. You didn't have to diet because you ate heavy and hearty. My father told my mother when I first started to work, but when I started to work, I was 17 years old, and she said, "Get a boy 12 ears of corn because he's going to have to work." Well, they only gave him you 6. And after a while, I thought the medic might ought to give me 18 here. Because it was just what he said. So, this is a track gauge. Standard track in the United States, Canada, and Mexico is 56.5 inches from the inside of the gauge to this inside. European countries such as France, or Germany, or Russia, or English rail gauge is 60 inches. 4 inches, like say, long. Elder has here in his hand a track wrench. And there's a little method in putting the joints. And the man put those bolts in that joint, and his hand went like this. But at the same time, he's turning that bar of that wrench around in his hand. So he had to have a skill, because it was a continuous motion. And you learn how to do that. So, Sir Jones has a, what they call a spike puller, a claw bar. And it pulls spikes out of the track. Now that bar weighs between 75 and 100 pounds. But what he's doing, he's using it skillfully. He's allowing the vacuum of the bar to pull the spike. Only thing he's doing is moving it. He's letting the weight of the bar do it. See? So it's not as strenuous as what it seems if you know. Now, this part of the bar, you don't put your hands on this end. Because if you were inside and this bar slipped off the spike head, that meant that you are minus of a finger. So that's one of the safety aspects of it. So you never put your hand on the end of your bar. We've had spikes. What they call the rail tongs. All rail dogs. The instrument itself is 75 or 80 pounds. But this is what you handle the rail with. You would have six men on one end of the rail.
Don't pick it up.
And six on the other end of the rail. But the rail, when the caller gives the command, that's why you have to be agile. The agility comes in. Well, if there were ways, he said, I call for that rail. The man on the opposite side was the rail. He jump up in there. The man on the other side of the rail carried to him. So if he wants to set this rail over here, for that dotted outline that is, and he would give the command, this man jumps up, he's on this side, carries it over there. If he does not jump up, then he's minus some legs. So that's why he would have to be agile. This is one of the most critical and important tools that is on the railroad. This is the leveling board. This is what causes the train to run smooth, but also in this end of this board is all of the calculations, all the mathematics that I alluded to just a while ago. This is the critical end of the level board. If you're going to elevate, you have to have an elevation in curves. And you use this end. 1/2 inch equals to 10 miles of speed. So you walk up according to where the apex of the curve, that's the, right in the middle of the bend. And you got to step up to that, and you got to step down to that. You have to calculate the footage up to that and the footage beyond it. You have to take in consideration the chemistry and the physics of it. The sun has a tendency to heat. It causes the elongation of the rails. So you have to calculate what's the temperature, how far is it going to go? Because if you do not, the sun will cause the rails to elongate, and right at the apex of the curve, it will shoot this track all the way out of the bed. So this is why this instrument becomes critical. You have to know or how to use a bit of algebra, how to calculate how much is this rail going to elongate according to the temperatures. If it's 90 degrees, say like here in Florida, down near Miami, or where you have the maybe higher degrees. This still elongates. And I was telling late over there, we used to have to come and stand and wait. And you watched it. And you see it move. And it's what they call an expansion joint. You cut a piece out and you stood there. And along about 1 o'clock, as it had walked close to it, finally it's going to slam together. And then you put the bolts in it right quick. You put the joint on it. Now in the wintertime, you have to go right back to that same spot, take it loose, and let it retract itself. And it would inspect the same way. So in the wintertime, where the retraction is a little slower than the elongation of it. So you have to have little pieces that you put in there to take up the space until it reaches maximum retraction. And then you solidify it there. So that's why I say, young folks, pay attention to that chemistry teaching. Because all of these figures come into play. All of these skills comes into play. Now, the only thing that keeps the train on the track is the gauge, the flange of the wheel, and the gravitational pull. You perhaps come into that theory in physics. But the faster, the more, and the weight, the more gravitational pull comes. It pulls down, and that's what keeps it on the track. Now, the gauge, it has a 1-inch gauge, or 1-inch flange, on the inside of the wheel. And this is what's running along here. And this is why you can't have the rock in motion. Because if it rocks up, you've seen a dog when he kicks up his leg. If he rocks up and he brings his leg down and he sits outside, see, then you have a wreck. So when you can't have that rock in motion, this is why you level the track. So you don't have that. You don't want the wheels doing this. Because eventually it's going to set out the track. So you level the track. We have a little opening song here where we introduce let the fellas introduce themselves. And right now we're going to call on our senior citizen to lead us in this song.
Good evening, everybody. How do you do? Good evening, everybody. How do you do? We so very glad to see you. Oh, how do you do? My name is John Millen. Oh, how do you do? My name is John Millen. How do you do? I'm so very glad to see you. Oh, how do you do? My name is Charlie Benson. Oh, how do you do? My name is Charlie Benson. Oh, how do you do? Oh, he's so very glad to see you. Oh, how do you do?
My name is Alan Jones.
Oh, how do you do?
My name is Alan Jones.
Oh, oh,
how do you do?
Oh, he's so very glad to see you. Oh, oh, how do you do?
My name is Elder Brown.
Oh, how do you do?
My name is Elder Brown.
Oh, oh, how do you do? Oh, he's so very glad to see you. Oh, oh, how do you do?
My name is
do.
Whoa, how do you do?
My name is C. Right, do.
Whoa, whoa,
how do you do?
Oh, he's so very glad to see you. Whoa,
how do you do?
We are the Getty Dancers.
Whoa,
how do you do?
We are the Getty Dancers.
Whoa, whoa,
how do you do?
Oh, we are
so very glad to see you.
Oh, oh, how
do you do?
That's just a little opening song to try to get the fellas, you know, sort of in the mood. And the song has caused many things. And, you know, I listened to a preacher one time and says that the children of Israel should have sung because they were too quiet. They didn't catch the momentum of the times and the predicament that they were in. Men on the railroad has always sang because that, in a sense, gave them the invigoration and they could relieve themselves or whatever the task was, you know. In this United States, railroads have played an important part and is still one of the greatest movers of product and tonnage. One train can carry as much as 10,000 trucks if you put the engine power to it. With the coming of the electronic age, now one five-man crew can operate 16 engines. So when we found out how to wire the engines in series, one man with the aid of a radio control car can operate 8 engines on the front end and 8 engines in the middle. It gives him 16 times the engine power, yet only using one engineer. We can move a great deal of tonnage. But men have sung or sang to themselves and used song all of these years in order to keep themselves together. And this is why we sing. We want to get our minds away from the work that we're doing. You know, we imported into this country 158 Chinese in order to build the railroads on the West Coast. We brought in the Eastern Europeans and people from Poland in order to build the railroads in the northeast and the northern part of the country because of the climatic conditions. We brought in people off out of the island into this very state, Florida, here. And somebody went to Africa and got me. And they brought me in. I began to build the railroads from Virginia down into the top end of Florida and through Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Kentucky, and a part of Texas. Then we went down to Mexico and we got the Mexicans and we got the Indians out in the Midwest. And they began to build railroads. So we have a coming together of several cultures that built this great American railroad system. And we've all contributed to building what is one of the greatest transportation systems in the world. It's one of the now almost more sophisticated transportation systems. And when we get all you young folk together here and get your minds around them, we're going to outdo the French and the Germans and the Japanese and all. We're going to have a greater system, transportation system that transports people than they have. You keep that in mind now. Now, we're going to demonstrate just a little bit, a few songs, and then we're going to raise the track on that end. And we're going to sort of get it up out of the rock. It makes it move a little easier. And then we won't sing the hot won't have to sing those hot songs. Like I say, a woman is one of the greatest motivators in the world. Man only goes to work because of a woman. He goes home for the shelter. And this is what is in the back of his mind. So when the podcast come on, that caller puts that woman into that man's head. He calls that man to reminisce and to think about what he did Saturday night. He calls him to use some kind of imagination. What he's going to do when he gets into that town up ahead. What is that woman going to be, the shake dancer? Or what is she going to be, the stripper? You see? So he sets all of these things into that man's head. And this is why he used certain songs. We won't be able to use quite, you know, the language. Because, see, that's why I stay kind of away from that group. See how close they are? Some dickens in that group. And I don't want the good Lord to distract me because I know I'm a devil. And I try to stay away from him a good distance, so if he send the lightning, he'll hit them. Don't hit me. But men used language. Railroad men, while they had the reputation of being grouchy, and they had a great morality about them. They respected the deity. They had a great respect for children and women. And it's just certain things that they didn't say or didn't do when a child or woman was present. Now, when they were down in the cut, and the lady asked me this morning, what was the cut? That was down a ways where you were in the woods and usually where the track is bending. A sailor couldn't even use the profanity that they used. And they could say some pretty vile things down there, but it excited you, you know. So we usually start with the one or two nursery rhymes to get the kids to sort of sing. Now, as you might know, these bars are steel. It's made out of different chemistries, which causes it to give off a different sound. Each one of these bars give off a different sound. You arrange these bars the same as a symphony orchestra arranges instruments, so that it can give off that sound. If it gave off a different sound, or the sound wasn't coordinated, it would be noise. See, you get a group of instruments together and everybody's playing. They might be playing the same thing, but except that they are coordinated and synchronized, it will sound like noise. But once that conductor gets them together, then comes the music. See, these bars are the same. So you arrange these bars. That's what we were doing in the beginning. We were tapping them. We were trying to get a sound of what note they were giving off. So we arranged them in the order that they're in so they could make a little music. Yeah. All right, so let's sit down in here. Now, to make it move just a little bit easier, we're gonna kind of raise this up. And this is where the jacks and the level board comes in. Yeah, right there where you are. Now, this is where, remember now, in these years, there weren't any instruments. You had to do it out of your eyesight. So, the man who looked down the rail or did the pulling of the track was called the dead eye. And you had different, some people were better than others, like it is in all humans. Some could look better, and some had a sharper eye. And those that didn't have a sharp eye, the caller talked about him. So later on, we might talk about me a little bit. But I'm going to peek down here and see if we elevate that a little bit, make it move a little easier. Set one in that junk down there. See now what you see, the little dip in there? I'm looking right underneath here. So we're gonna pull that little swag out of that junk. We're gonna level it up. Now, in order for it to stay there, you got to do what you call checking it off. And that means that we got this is the one thing that the machine is not able to perfect. This is what you decide comes into it. So the machine, if you test the machine, it will do what you do. It's like a computer. You only get back out of the computer what you put into it. See? So the machine can only, you can only retract from that machine what you put into it. So, machine, if you said to pull 2 inches, it's gonna pull 2 inches all the way. It won't be able to vary and pull 3 inches here and come back to 2 inches. It will pull exactly 2 inches. Now, man, so the man side, the human side, the man can see this, so he can put 3 inches and spot the 4 inches. This is what it's called. The average crew, 2 or 4 men can service and capital 1 mile of railroad today. You must be after it, so you can see why you have to eat hard. Right. Build a new track on the roadbed. It takes 10 years for that roadbed to set up. So you have to continually do this periodically. But what you're trying to do is build a foundation where it will become stable. It's just like building a building. You know, I learned from engineering that when you build a house, a new house or a new building has to sell. You heard the house sells. I built a new house and I got it and I heard the thing check. Whoop, the house falling apart. The house, and I looked at the contractor and said, man, the house falling apart. He said, no, it's settling. You know, and it takes a while for a new home to settle. It takes, he said, 10 or 12 years or so. Periodically, we need practice. That's the house suffering. The foundation. This is what happens to a railroad. It takes 10 years for it to settle. Now, come right in the joint now. I don't know why he got such a thing about preachers.
I ain't no thing about no preachers.
Day Sunday, day Saturday. Yo. In Maury, you won't say nothing about the preacher. He sang a little preacher, a song about a preacher. And the song is about a preacher. You know, doing a little mischievous deed. So, you want to sing it, you want to let me sing it?
You sing
it. Oh, he's afraid. Hey, he's not dog. I won't try to sing this. Some folks say that a preacher won't steal. I called three in my cornfield. One had a bushel head, but had a fake one. Had 3 years piled around the head. Some say a preacher. Some won't steal. I call three.
Number?
When they start a song, I'd like to know what the reading is.
So. That very same, okay. It was before 228.
Hey, you know that right?
Yeah! Can I set his baby in your mind? A little bit. I can't do a whole lot. Yeah, she's still in here. I'm gonna see, can you see this woman? If I can. I'm dressing it up now. All right, let's see. Sit down here. Let's see. Let me look now first, because it might be...
You know, we sang a few songs that a lot of times you, especially when you're working with other crews, and I live in a junction where about 6 railroads come to a head, or they cross each other. And a lot of times the caller, when he came around those other they sung songs that antagonized and the other crews that were working there. And you build up that anger among those crews. See, you were competitive and you wanted to make those crews angry. So there was one little call here that we sung that called the other folk. And I know some of you folk have people that work for some of these railroads, but this is one my daddy taught me.
Right.
Grab him here now.
We ready?
All right. See, boys, Southern, alien, don't do nothing but kill good men. See, boys, Southern, alien, don't do nothing but kill good men. Whoa! Wow.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, you can talk about him. Now, we're gonna do a little something here. Oh, let's put that spice.
Hammer man.
When I started on the railroad and 17 years old, my mother said that I had to go to school, and I progressed through track building into the railroad brakeman, and at the same time I had to go to school and I got a bachelor's degree in American history and minors in psychology, sociology, and physical education. And that's because my mother knocked me in the middle of the kitchen floor when I made the honor roll. I made the honor roll in 11th grade and brought the report card home. And we all sat at the dinner table, all 18 of us, 20 of us, with my mother and father, nine boys and nine girls in my family. And the oldest boy I sat next to my mother. And then we passed the report card around, and my daddy said, "Long boy," I said, "you did real well." "Good." And the report card got to my mother. That's when I tell you, fellas, you watch these women. The report card got to my mother, and she gave me what they call a backhand lick. One of these like this. And she slapped me in the middle of the kitchen floor, and I didn't understand. And you didn't question your parents. The only thing I said to her, "Mother, what? Why?" I said, "Come, you hit me like that?" I thought I had done it, well, you know, real well. They had gave me the blue ribbon, and they had gave me all these accolades, pinned all these good things for me. She said, "Boy, you're up there at that school acting a fool." She said, "You can go up there, you can be quiet, be mannerable, and do like that teacher tell you." She said, "You might not be able to learn, but at least you can be quiet." The only thing she saw on that report card was a D in conduct. To this day, I haven't ever got a D in conduct or nothing else. It's a Chinese proverb that says, better to keep one mouth closed and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and let everybody know. So I learned to keep my mouth closed. And I'm about to close my mouth here now. But I want to relate to you a little thing that happened to me in 1949 as I worked for the Frisco Railroad. Within Oklahoma, and one Sunday morning, and there came a lady, woman through the bushes with the child, and she walked, and she was in a hurry. She had taken off her shoes. And up near the railhead was a little white church sitting in the woods. And she seemed to be in a hurry. Russell, who was the caller, Russell had a booming voice. There were 40 of us in the crew. And we had been in the cut. Anything that you can imagine, anything that you can imagine that was can be thought of sexually and vulgar, which has already been said in that cut. But when that woman appeared, he had to immediately calm us down and put us in a different mood. We were hostile in that cut. And the track was down into clay. Hard to move. So he had sung all of the songs, a great portion of the songs that caused us to become just, you know, almost belligerent. We had become, but we was getting the track lying in the curve. So he calmed us down by singing this song. He sang, "One more time. One more time, one more time, one more time. Lord, I'm glad to be serving. One more time. If my mother, she asks for me, you tell I'm going to Galilee, because I'm glad to be in service one more time." And then as we moved on about a couple of hundred yards, there came a hearse across the cross. And we went over to the little church and backed up to the door. And he looked across and he saw it. We went across and saw the verse. He sung another verse. "This may be my last time. Oh, this may be
the lunchtime Tuesday.
This may be the last time.
Last time Tuesday. I don't know. Since we are now leading up to the close of this little performance, and we hope that some we have only scratched the surface. There's so much here to be shown, so much to be tell. Time won't allow it, but we have, you might say, minutely scratched the surface. And if I was talking to my mother, who had a third grade education, I would say, "Mother, we have intermittently scratched the surface." I have communicated with her. I have told her what she was doing. But see, if I was talking to this person, I would say we have infinitesimally scratched the surface. All meaning smallly. Good bone coming out. I'm so glad they didn't have no neck bones over there. So we're going to call on him to give us a little closing number. Everything has to have a beginning and a closing. So we're going to call on him to lead us in a little closing song.
By and by, when the morning comes, and all the saints of God gathering home, we will tell a story how we overcome, and we'll understand it now.